Welcome to Ecclesiology 101. Ecclesiology is our fancy term for the study of the church. Ecclesia is the Greek word that is usually translated as church in our English Bibles. So I'm thinking of this class as kind of an introduction to what the church is. So Ecclesiology 101 really means church 101. This is a course on some of the basics of church life. We're going to talk about the church's identity and purpose and mission. In the weeks to come, we'll talk about the church's government and her officers. We will look at the church's liturgy. We'll look at the church as community. We'll talk about the church's, what it means to be a member of the church, how church membership works. We'll talk about church discipline. So a lot of things here to cover. Since I'm calling this a 101 class, that kind of means introduction. I feel like I should be handing out a syllabus. I do not have a syllabus for you, but if you do want a document that you could use to follow along a lot of the things that I'm going to be talking about here, it would be the TPC Constitution. We give out a copy of the TPC Constitution in our membership meetings with you. So when you join the church, you meet with the elders, and we give you a copy of that Constitution as part of that, just so you'll have it so you can refer to it. Under the Bible, of course, because the Bible is the highest and ultimate authority. That's our only infallible authority. That's God's word. It's inspired, and obviously the TPC Constitution is not. But under the Bible, our Constitution is our governing document. But here's the thing. Woven into that Constitution is a description of how we understand the church and what we want our local church culture to look like based on our understanding of what the church is. So you can really think of the TPC Constitution as a kind of cross between a book of church order and a vision statement, because it really incorporates both elements. And again, that's why we give a copy of it to you when you join the church, because it's got a lot of information in there that basically communicates not just how we do things, but who we are, how we understand ourselves, how we understand the church more generally. Now, Christians can have very different understandings of what the church is. Christians don't always agree on what the church is. And I don't here just mean a Roman Catholic understanding of the church versus a Protestant understanding of the church. So that's part of it. And if we have time, eventually I hope to get into that. I don't even mean just a difference between, say, traditional or conservative Christians, how they understand the church versus, you might say, liberal or progressive Christians. Christians in general just sometimes come to a very different understanding of what the church is. I think COVID exposed this. COVID with the lockdowns and all of that, I think really exposed different understandings of the church. It was obvious during COVID that some Christians saw the church as essential in a way that others did not. And that's something that obviously if you were part of our church during all that, you know how we dealt with that and how we have emphasized how essential the church is. You know where we come down on that. But I'll tell you this one thing, and maybe this should not have been shocking. Maybe I should not have been surprised by this, but in a way it really was shocking to me. It's shocking how many pastors, and I think this again really came out during COVID. It's shocking how many pastors could not make a good case for why the church is essential and necessary. It was surprising to me how many pastors could not make a good case for why in-person worship matters. It's going to be obvious as we go through this that church is not something you can do online. The church, by definition, is an in-person gathering. And so if the church is essential, we're really saying those in-person gatherings are essential. A lot of pastors couldn't make that case, a case for why the church matters, why the church's gathering is so essential. And so it's not surprising that a lot of Christians were not really taught in this either. And so they didn't really understand why the church matters, why going to church matters. And so they were quick to abandon the church in a time of crisis. In fact, there are still a lot of people out there who quit going to church during COVID and then never returned to in-person worship. Some of them have settled for just watching online. Others, they fell out of the habit, and because it wasn't that important to them, no strong case had been made, they never got back into the habit after COVID was over. So they really just dropped out of church altogether, and that's spiritually disastrous. One thing you're going to see in this class is that being part of the life or participating in the life of a local church is not something that's optional for the Christian. It's absolutely integral to what it means to be a Christian. Now, think about this. The Bible makes some really strong claims for what the church is. And I'm going to limit myself here really primarily to the New Testament, although virtually every single one of these categories I'm going to mention could be traced back to the Old Testament. We're probably just more familiar with the New Testament text. That's really where I'm going to focus. But the Bible, if you just look at what the Bible says about the church, just on the surface of it, it's very obvious how important, indeed, how glorious the church is. The Bible makes some really strong claims for the church. Consider some of the ways that the Bible describes the church, titles or names or descriptors that the Bible gives to the church. Think about some of these. The church is called the temple, or it's called a house that God is building. Obviously, when you build a house, it's so you can live in it. So God is building this house so he can dwell in the house and in the church, so that God can dwell in the community of his people. And obviously, if the church is a house for God, we want God to feel at home in his house. And so we want the church to be organized and run and governed. And, we want to be the house of God in such a way that God will feel right at home in the house that he is building. So in passages like Ephesians 2 and 1 Peter 2 and several other places, it's really clear the church is the temple of God, a house for God to dwell in. Related to that, we could talk about the church as a royal priesthood. In 1 Peter 2, Paul talks about the church as a royal priesthood or a kingdom of priests. So we're the house, we're the temple. So that word temple really just means house for God. Okay, so that's what it is. The church is a house. Who ministers in the house? Who serves in the house? Well, priests. That's the job of a priest, is to serve in the house. And so we serve in God's house, and we do that by offering God sacrifices. Now, in a very real sense, the whole Christian life is supposed to be one big living sacrifice that we offer to God. But specifically, it's most obvious that we are a priesthood and that we are offering sacrifices when we gather for worship and we offer the sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that confess his name. Everything about the liturgy is sacrificial, and that's how we exercise our priesthood. We could talk about the church as the bride of Christ. Think about Ephesians chapter 5. Paul there is talking about marriage, and there's all kinds of instruction about marriage there that's really important for us to, if you want to understand what it means to be a husband or what it means to be a wife, that's a great passage to go to. But Paul says at the end of that passage, he's really talking about Christ and the church. And so just as a husband and wife become one, they're united together and the two become one, they're one flesh, they're joined in this covenant union. So it is with Christ and the church. In fact, human marriage has been given to us ultimately so we can understand something of Christ's relationship with his people. That's the original marriage. That's the archetype for marriage. Our marriages, our earthly marriages, you could say, are copies of that. They're intended to symbolize that, with the husband as the Christ figure and the wife as the bride figure. So that's one aspect of it, the union that we have with Christ. But another aspect of Ephesians chapter 5, it makes it really clear that a husband's love for his wife is to be transformative. It is to transform her. It is to beautify her and to glorify her. It is to his love is to wash out her blemishes. His love is to smooth out her wrinkles so that she is this glorious, beautiful sight to behold. And that's another way we have to think about the church, that the church is absolutely beautiful. We should be mesmerized by the beauty of the church, what it means to be the church. Here's another one. The church is the bride of Christ. The church is also the body of Christ. So this is also, I think, gets at the union that Christians have with the union that we have with Christ. So Christ is the head, and we're different members of the body. And that's a way of thinking about the relationship that we have. So clearly, if Christ is the head and we're different members of the body, you really can't think of yourself as a Christian apart from the church, because how else can you be united to the head unless you're part of the body? But the body is the church. So there's this union that we have with Christ. It's this head-body union. But another way, Paul in 1 Corinthians 12, the way he really unpacks this, he says we're all members of one body. The one body has a variety of members, and we all have gifts that we use to serve the good of the whole. And so your feet serve the good of the whole body by getting you around. Your hands serve the good of the whole body by allowing you to pick up things. Your eyes do the seeing for the whole body. So every member of the body needs every other member of the body. And that's really how the church is. Every one of us is essential to the life of the church because God has gifted us and equipped us. And if we don't participate in the life of the church, if we're not here, if we're not part of what's happening, then the whole body misses out. Likewise, if you detach yourself from the body, if I were to pull out my eyeball and set it right here, my eye doesn't work. It serves no purpose apart from the body. It can't function apart from the body. So it is with Christians. You can't really live the Christian life in isolation from the church. To be a Christian and to be a member of the body, those are just two ways of saying the same thing. Another title that's used for the church is household. In 1 Timothy 3, I think you also get that in Ephesians 2. The church is called the family of God in Ephesians 3 and other places. So household, family, these are ways of thinking of the church in corporate terms, communal terms. The church is a family or church is community. It's a really helpful way to think about the church. Here's one I really like, and you see this in Galatians 4. There are some other places where you see this, the church as mother. And it's so important to understand what it means to call the church mother. Paul says that our mother above is free in Galatians chapter 4. The argument in Galatians chapter 4 is kind of complicated, but he's basically contrasting Old Covenant Israel and especially those Jews who've stayed in the Old Covenant. They have not embraced Jesus as Messiah, so they've not come into the New Covenant. And so they're in slavery, they're in bondage. But those who have come into the New Covenant, we've moved from the earthly Jerusalem now to the heavenly Jerusalem, and we're free. And the Jerusalem that is above is our mother. So we've been born into this heavenly city, this heavenly community. The church as mother is really, really important. We already talked about the church as bride. Christ is the husband. The church is the bride. Well, she is a fruitful bride, and so she gives birth to children. So you might even kind of think this through. What does it mean to have the church as our mother? How should we understand that? Well, the church gives us birth, so to speak, in the waters of baptism. That's our new birth into this family. The church then nourishes us at her table, at the Lord's table. The church nurtures us and trains us and disciplines us and equips us, especially through the word as it's taught. So just like your mother, you know, you an infant cannot live without his or her mother. You have to have a mother to keep you alive, to nurture you, to care for you, to look after you. So it is with Christians. We cannot do without our mother. We will languish and die without her. We can't be cut off from her and then expect to live. One thing this image does, I think it reinforces the importance of our earthly mothers and how much we should honor them, but it also helps us to understand what the church is. You know, the metaphor moves in both directions. Calling the church mother helps us understand human motherhood, and human motherhood helps us understand what it means to call the church our mother. Calvin really had a bit to say about this. I'm going to read to you some quotes from him. But think about this. You know, maybe probably none of us have ever given the church a Mother's Day card on Mother's Day, but that wouldn't be such a bad idea. That may be something we should consider doing, is just like we write our mother's thank you cards, thank you notes on Mother's Day to say you've been a great mother, thank you so much. Maybe we should do that kind of thing with the church come Mother's Day, because she is our spiritual mother. Listen to what Calvin had to say. This is from his Institutes, and it's a very famous statement where he describes the church's mother. He says, "Because it is now our intention to discuss the visible church, let us learn from the simple title mother how useful, indeed, how necessary." So, you know, we talk about how essential the church is. The church is useful here. The church is necessary, okay? And why is she necessary? It is necessary that we should know her, for there is no other way to enter into life unless this mother conceive us in her womb, give us birth, nourish us at her breast, and lastly, unless she keep us under her care and guidance until putting off mortal flesh, we become like the angels. Calvin here is saying basically until we leave this world and go to be with the Lord in glory, we must be under the care of the church. He goes on, he says, "Our weakness does not allow us to be dismissed from her school until we have been pupils all our lives. Furthermore, away from her bosom, one cannot hope for any forgiveness of sins or any salvation." So there's no forgiveness or salvation to be found outside of the church, ordinarily at least. That's the case. The church is our mother. Listen to another statement of his. This is from a sermon he preached on 1 Timothy. He says, if we could truly be seen to be God's children, the church must be our mother and its ministers our fathers. Anyone who cannot accept that should, as we said before, go and make their home in hell with Satan, for there is no place or room for them in God's church. If you think you don't need the church, well, you've heard me talk about that billboard on I-65, go to church or the devil will get you, go to church or go to hell. That's what Calvin is saying here. If you won't have the church for your mother, well, you go make your home in hell, because that's where you're headed, because the church is the place where God is working out his salvation. At least ordinarily, the church is the place of salvation. Now, we'll talk about how maybe that needs to be qualified or unpacked in various ways in a bit, but I think I think Calvin's exactly right about that. One more quote from Calvin here. This is from his Galatians commentary. He says, the heavenly Jerusalem, and that's his way of describing the church here following the Apostle Paul, the heavenly Jerusalem, which derives its origin from heaven and dwells above by faith, is the mother of believers. For she has the incorruptible seed of life deposited in her, by which she forms us, cherishes us in her womb, and brings us to light. She has the milk and the food by which she continually nourishes her offspring. This is why the church is called the mother of believers. And certainly he who refuses to be a son of the church desires in vain to have God as his father. For it is only through the ministry of the church that God begets sons for himself and brings them up until they pass through adolescence and reach manhood. This is a title of wonderful and the highest honor. It says this is a church of wonderful honor and the highest honor that could be given to this community, to this institution, as the people of God, to call her the mother of believers. So that's a way to think about the church. And Calvin here is echoing the church fathers, who basically said that you cannot have God for your father unless you have the church for your mother. And I'll come back to this in a bit, but we need to understand there's a very tight link between the church and salvation again. So that's something that Calvin very much emphasized. Other ways to think of the church, other titles given to the church. The church is not just your mother or your mom. You know, we could say the church is your mom. The church is a holy nation. This is picking up on titles given to Israel, like royal priesthood. The church is a holy nation. Okay, now think about a nation. Okay, a nation is a defined people group with its own customs and culture and way of life. The church doesn't have geographic borders the way some nations do, but the church is a nation nonetheless, and the church is a holy nation. It's a very special nation that belongs to God. Holiness there has to do with our priestly status, the priestly access we have, and it also indicates how we are to live as his holy people, as a people who are set apart and who live with integrity and obedience to him. But the church is a nation. That means the church has her own culture. The church has her own heroes and villains, her own story, her own customs and rituals and symbols and so forth. So the church is a defined people group. And of course, that people group comes to expression in different earthly nations. So not all Christians are exactly the same in those kinds of ways. But there are certain core things that all Christians throughout the nations of the world are going to share together, so much so that we can say the church herself is a kind of nation spread out throughout the nations of the world. Another title, and this one we kind of already hinted at in talking about the church as mother, is church as city of God. This is one that Hebrews gives us. You find it in Revelation. John's vision at the end of Revelation, he sees the heavenly Jerusalem coming down out of heaven. And it's the vision of the church. It's of a people. So the people are described as a place. The people are described as a city, as the new and heavenly Jerusalem. So think of the church as a city. All of these and of course there are others that we could get into, but all of these are titles that describe for us what the church is. And we understand these titles, and of course they're all corporate. If we understand these titles, then we can say, okay, Now I get it. Now I understand what it means to be a part of the church and why it's so essential to be a part of the church and why understanding my own identity, you know, I'm going to understand my identity fundamentally in terms of my membership in the church. That's the most important thing about me. So I'm a member of a family. I'm a member of an earthly nation. I'm a member of, you know, other institutions or I have other relationships, but this is what's fundamental to my identity, the fact that I'm a part of the church. And being a part of the church is it helps me understand my relationship with Jesus and how I am supposed to relate to him. So absolutely crucial that we get this. So these are titles that the New Testament gives to the church as the people of God. I want to leave you with one last thing here. You know, people will sometimes say, well, you know, it seems like being a part of the church, I mean, that's great and all, but it seems like the church has all kinds of problems, doesn't it? I mean, isn't the church full of hypocrites? Isn't it sometimes full of sinners? Isn't the church, you know, doesn't the church have all kinds of weaknesses, especially in our day? And I would say, yeah, you know, actually it really does. And those are things that we want to do something about. I'm going to talk about that and how we should understand all of that as we go. You know, we definitely agree that the church has all kinds of shortcomings. But here's the thing. If you've got a problem with the church, understand that, well, first of all, the church is not a finished product, okay? The church is on her way to glory and to perfection. She is in the process of being transformed by the love of her husband, by Jesus, and being made beautiful. She hasn't arrived at the destination yet. A lot of times the church, you know, people can get hurt by the church or be disappointed with the church. And again, this may be something I come back and talk about more at a later point. All of that's true. Okay, all of that's very true, but that does not detract from what the church objectively is. And so even if, say, you get stuck in a messy relationship situation in the church, or you see a church, you know, do something, I mean, obviously some churches become so unfaithful, they become synagogues of Satan, and some churches are so compromised that you should go find a healthier church if that's where you are. But here's the thing, even though the church is imperfect, the church is the place we have to be if we want to experience the saving work of God. If we want to receive God's gifts and if we want to experience the grace of God, the grace of God is most operative through word and sacrament as they are available to us in the church. Listen to what Eugene Peterson says about, you know, those. These are sort of his words to people who have a problem with the church. He says, every congregation is a congregation of sinners. That's very true. He says, as if that weren't bad enough, they all have sinners for pastors. And that's exactly right, too. Every pastor is a sinner. All the elders and deacons, they're sinners, too. Everybody in the church is still a sinner. Everybody in the visible church, the church militant on earth, is still a sinner. Peterson goes on, he says, there's nobody who doesn't have problems with the church because there is sin in the church. But then he adds, there's no other place to be a Christian. And that's exactly right. There is no other place to be a Christian. The church is the place where God has called us to live out the Christian life. And in this class, that's hopefully what we're going to learn how to do. All right. Thank you all very much.